Great. Good morning, everybody, or good afternoon. This is the Verifiable Credentials Ed for Education Task Force call, Monday, November 22nd. To get started, we're going to go over our proposed agenda, which is the IP note, call notes, select a scribe. So if anybody has that in mind, please consider, and then also do some introductions and reintroductions. A few announcements, and then what we're going to do today is hear from the candidates for the co-chairs, the two open slots of the co-chairs, so we can kick off our election. IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreements signed. You should ensure that you have a W3C account. Here, the link in the chat is how to join the W3. Oh, actually, this form right here is how to join the W3C. And then you also have to agree to a W3C Community Contributors License Agreement. Okay, so on these calls, we record all of the, we do an audio recording, and then we take minutes of everything that is on this call, and then we archive these at this URL so that if you miss a call and you'd like to see what happened during a call, you can do so right here. So we use chat and IRC to queue up speakers during this call as well as to take our minutes. So you can use a Jitsi chat or you can use IRC. I think most folks are using Jitsi chat. One of the commands we use to queue ourselves up is to type Q plus to put yourself in the queue like that, and then Q minus to take yourself out of the queue. You could also say, you want to say this, if you want to mention your topic, say this, you know, this is my topic, so we know what you're queuing up for. Just one note is that you know, we try to keep it brief when we are in the queue, especially if there's other people in there. So just be respectful of what other people's questions, comments are, and keep an eye on the chat. So we do need a scribe. The scribe basically doesn't take word-for-word notes, although some people choose to. It just sort of captures what is going on in the conversation as it happens. And then these get posted in the minutes. And it's okay if it's not perfect. We just do our best to capture this so that others can, you know, read through what happened in the calls. Does anybody here like to volunteer to be a scribe? First timers, welcome. Okay, one thing I can't do while I'm running the call is be a scribe. So I need one person to say they'll do it today.
Hey, Carrie, this is Heather. I'll scribe.
Thank you, Heather. Appreciate that. Just make a note here. All right. Okay, is there anyone in the call today that would, that is new to the call and would like to introduce themselves? Okay. Any reintroductions or something that somebody has going on that they want to tell the group about? All right, quiet Monday. So announcements and reminders. There will be no meeting next Monday on the 29th, and our last two meetings of the year are going to be December 6th and December 13th. And on December 7th, the VC Edgy Task Force is being featured on the main CCG call. So I'm going to update them with where we are, hopefully who our new additional co-chairs are. And if there are any topics that you're interested in sharing, or, you know, questions or, you know, presentations, anything you want to include in that call, please reach out to me so we can make sure that that gets included. One topic that I know is on the list that's been in the mailing list too is about complex credentials and embedding VCs that keeps coming up in education. So that is what one of the topics that we'll talk about there. Okay, I think that's what I have for announcements. So why don't we get going with the candidates? So we're about to get into a election for, we have two slots open for our BCEDU task force for the co-chairs. And we have four candidates. And today what we're going to do is, ask each candidate to, even though they already submitted their self-nomination to the email list, to, we're asking them to each kind of describe, you know, why you're here, why you're interested in this role. And then after each person does that, we can open it up for questions. Okay. And I'm first going to call on Frank. Frank, you were our first, you were the first nomination. So, I'm going to open it up to you. Why don't you introduce yourselves and tell us more about yourself and why you're interested in this work?
Hi, thank you so much. Hello, everybody. I was having trouble. I had some kind of Zoom link, so apologize for coming in late. So we're a technology company, and I founded the company about 10 years ago, focused on solving the skills gap. Our background is mostly working on solving business problems with technology. So understanding why we have a skills gap took us down a journey that continues over the last 10 years. And I feel that it's not only important to try to solve these kinds of challenges with technology, but there's more to it. And on the skills gap front, there was a lot more to it. It was technology, it was content, it was ecosystem partnership standards. The largest cadre of different dimensions of importance in solving the problem and use cases. That said, we feel that there's not just technology involved and everything I just mentioned, but when we talk content, for example, taxonomy was one of the core pieces, and the learner is the center of the universe, and the taxonomy is core between the learner, learning institutions, and enterprises to try to reach an environment, to try to create an environment that enables everybody to speak the same language. So in the spirit of that journey, I have volunteered a lot of my time for the great efforts in the market around that. So for example, in the cybersecurity area, which we played a big role in trying to pioneer and work with the NICE framework, for example, which is a joint collaborative between the Department of Commerce, Department of Defense, and the NIST group. I co-chaired the taxonomy group that was focused on trying to see if we could leverage the NICE framework, which is a cybersecurity taxonomy framework, to apply toward the private sector. It was built originally for government. We needed to expand it. So I spent a few years, brought together about 35 different industry players, biggest banks in the world, both here and in Europe, to bring together what we felt was the right people and organizations to come up with how do we extend the government's framework to be applicable to the private sector. So I'm not going to go through many others, but other than to just highlight for you all, you know, the journey includes different areas such as standards. So I'm involved with the OSN, the Open Skills Network. IQ4 provided the MyHub technology that we built for the National Student Clearinghouse, for the IBM blockchain cloud called the Learning Credential Network. We're very involved in the governance and policy work groups around creating an open source taxonomy, not just for OSN, but for the IEEE work with OpenSALT and CASE. So I'm kind of winding down some of those areas. And when I looked at this and the work I'm also doing with the folks at the U.S. Chamber in terms of their T3 network and other initiatives, I felt that this was potentially something that I could maybe add value. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's folks here on the phone that have toss their hat in. They could probably do a lot better job than me. But that's about it. Does that help?
That was great. Thanks, Frank. All right, hang tight because we're going to go through the other nominees and then we'll open it up for questions. Simone, you are next.
Hey, can you hear me and see me?
Yes, thank you.
All right. Hello, everyone. So, ciao, my name is Simone. I'm based in Italy, but my work has been really globally in the last 15 years. I currently work for a company called Digitary, recently acquired by Parchment, that is in the digital credential space, mostly in the higher education sector. Part of what I've always done across different organizations was contributing to building standards around learner records or to support student mobility. I've had an opportunity to do this early on in Europe and probably work on some of the specs that are now being picked up by flagship initiatives in Europe, like Europass, for example, or the recent European blockchain service infrastructure. And so my core focus here is to recognize that this is a vibrant and diverse ecosystem and would like to keep the work that we're doing here in connection or respecting what's happening elsewhere. Because ultimately, I feel that to get to an adoption stage, or if you were talking about interoperability, is really important to recognize the work of others and be able to work together. That means adopting a bit of humble intelligence and taking advantage of what's happening elsewhere in terms of spec work. If when we look at verifiable credentials, there's a wealth of work that is happening inside the credentials that needs to be taken into consideration, even in the more in the outer skin of a credential. We know this really well here in this group. But also, recognize that there is the ultimate objective here is adoption. And that's what I'm particularly keen on. And if there's one thing that I'd like to see happen in my professional life is that some of the standards, particularly around learner records that we're working on, really get into mainstream adoptions and they solve some problems. I wanted to also mention, just to give you a sense of, what's happening outside of BC Edu. In Canada, recently, the CIO Strategy Council is working on a new spec around digital credentials and digital trust services. This is being discussed, tomorrow as well for a round of comments. Some of you may be involved in that. Also, just today and tomorrow in Europe, the CEN, which is the European Standardization Committee, is hosting a plenary session to kick off again work of a technical committee on learning technologies that, was very much alive, I say 10 years ago, and now this is restarting. So that, to me, that's what I definitely want to bring into this particular work group. And hoping that we could all work solve this issue at a global level. And I'll stop here, Carrie, and I'll give it back to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Simone. Appreciate it. Dimitri, you are next.
All right. How's my sound quality? Can you hear me?
Sounds
okay?
Sounds great. Yep.
Okay. Fantastic. So hi, everyone. I'm Dimitri Zagadoulin. I'm a software engineer in the decentralized identity and credentials space. I got involved with this group, the VC EDU Task Force, when I was working for Kim Hamilton Duffy on, I was helping her out draw up the architecture of the learner credential wallet that she was heading for MIT's Digital Credential Consortium. And since then, Kim stepped away into blockchain land, and I've stepped up to head the Learner Credential Wallet project at DCC. So I bring a combination of low-level hands-on experience with implementation of credentials, decentralized identifiers, and sort of related libraries, but also like a high-level strategic overview. So I built a lot of the... I'm a implementer on a lot of the libraries that many of the credential projects are using. So the VC JavaScript library, many DID resolvers, I'm one of the editors on the DID key spec, DID web. I'm part of the verifiable credentials working group. And the other focus that I have is I'm very much about reaching out and building bridges between different standards communities. So I'm active here in the W3C, in CCG, in the various related work groups. I'm active in DIF. I'm a co-chair of the Secure Data Storage Working Group, a Decentralized Identity Foundation. I'm also active in OpenID Foundation, IEEE, IETF, and similar groups. So, yeah, my day-to-day work is exactly this. It involves a lot of listening and understanding and explaining, but also hands-on implementation. I've really enjoyed this group, and I think it's doing amazing things, and I would like to help. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Dimitri. And Colin, are you here?
Yeah, hey. Can you hear me all right?
You can. Go ahead. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, hi, everybody, and thanks for the time to chat. I think I'm kind of a new kid on the block in terms of listening to others and share about their experience as it relates to, I think, sort of this VC did sort of interoperable world. But I've been spending my career in education as a teacher, as an administrator, and a tech integrationist and instructional coach, and I think I started getting involved with learning economy more formally about 2 years ago, and it was kind of out of curiosity to see and learn what is happening in the digital world that was connected to some of the work that I had been doing, you know, at the local, state, and national level for education in terms of organic, more grassroots digital portfolio development, all the way back to the early days of the open badges with Mozilla. And I was teaching first grade at the time, and I was one of the few people who was like trying to build badges for my first graders so they could take them to second grade and so on. There was just so much to learn at that point, and seeing what's happened over the last 10 years in terms of development in that space is sort of what encouraged me to continue digging and learning more about all the work that I think everybody here has been doing. And so over the last 2 years, I've really had kind of a quick and dirty education in, you know, digital identity, verifiable credentials, and just this whole ecosystem. And so along that time, I've been the secretary of the IEEE ILR working group, been involved in the OSN as a facilitator for all the different projects from the spring pilots last year, and what they're calling collaboratives now. And so many of you I have been on calls with, worked with, and most importantly for me, learned a tremendous amount from. And that is why I nominated myself and want to contribute back to this community, is I feel like I've learned an incredible amount and want to continue to partner with all of you here to further the initiatives and help to bridge some of the gap that I see between the different silos of education, all the way from early childhood through K-12 into higher ed, and then continuing it into employment and upskilling and reskilling for new job opportunities. And so to me, this is a great middle ground to help to bridge those worlds and to partner with people who have very deep technical skill and are very brilliant in a lot of ways that I'm not, to help, I think, make connections to bring implementation and practical use cases to our learners all across the board. So I'll stop there and just say thanks for the opportunity and look forward to continuing to learn and help everybody along the way.
Thank you, Colin. That was great. Okay, so what we're going to do, well, first of all, I just want to say thank you to the four of you for putting yourself out there and offering to take on this role. All of you are great candidates. What I'm going to do is in the chat for everybody else, I'll just put a link to the role description so that you have that as a reference. And then what I'd like to do is open up the queue to questions and see if anybody has any questions for any of the candidates. Heather? Sorry, Marty, can you cue yourself? I'm going to call on Heather first. Go ahead, Heather.
Great, Carrie. So this is a question for any or all of the candidates. what do you think is the biggest challenge that this community can overcome to help the development of educational credentials? And, you know, what can you in your co-chair role do, or what do you think you can in your co-chair role do to help further the progress that we've already made?
Thanks for that question. Why don't we go in the same order? Frank, would you like to take that question first?
Sure. Great question, actually, because we're right in the middle of it. And I think the biggest challenge is mapping competencies and skills to courses. I think it's the biggest challenge for post-secondary education. That said, because it's a huge lift, we built the technology that was used in the White House for the cyber pilot. We did the Indiana wallet, all of that MyHub, all of that work. And the biggest lift that we saw, the biggest issue was trying to get the schools to understand how do I translate my course into competencies? And so we're doing a lot of work on quite a number of fronts to create a simple way to do it, number one, and really going right to the faculty with that at massive scale, and using things like machine learning, et cetera, to be able to simplify that process, like buying a book online from Amazon and recommending things. I think the other second piece is triangulating three core sources. There's a lot of great taxonomies in the market that have standardized, like the ONET framework and NICE and others. And I think industry in general has a pretty decent handle on what their taxonomies look like. I think the high schools have a pretty decent handle because they need to develop curriculum based on learning outcomes. So they've got in place today using IEEE and some of the CASE frameworks. There's about 160,000 competencies out there that we can triangulate. And I think the combination of those two, the high school market, which has an established environment, and the enterprise market, we can come up with a way to help the post-secondary market understand what skills they have that are in the market that can map to their courses, and then populate these open frameworks like OSN or CASE so that we can fine tune that over time. So I think that's the biggest challenge. And I think there's a way forward, but I also believe that tapping into the ecosystem of different organizations that W3C can influence is really key to this, to solving that problem.
Thank you, Frank. Simone?
Well, I think verifiable credentials are very much fit for the current Web 3.0 circumstances. And the key challenge is that to avoid leaving anyone behind. So when I think of verifiable credentials for its adoption, I mean, they need to be able to work well with what's already working today. And this could be, and I'm talking about what goes into a verifiable credentials, particularly, you know, this could be a CLR, as we've seen, a PDF, or, and particularly open badges have already started along that journey. But it's, again, to me, incredibly important that when we try to build the future of verifiable credentials in the education context. We just anchor. And we build that bridge with technologies that may belong to a different era, but that's important to have a safe pathway for all the adopters and to take on that challenge. And I think the other piece is, you know, introducing this verifiable layer, if we will, does not have to compromise user experience. Ultimately, some could argue that a digitally signed PDF is a verifiable credential. It was certainly before W3C VCs were around. And so there's a bit of respect for that in trying to build out in a modern way of credentials to be verified, but also not compromising the user experience, because that's going to hinder adoption a lot. And there are good examples. If we look at what open badges have been able to do in terms of that fruition, I think those are good things to keep in mind. So we don't want to, we want to have everyone on the journey. Back to you, Gary.
Thanks, Simone. Dimitri?
Thanks. So there's a lot of technical challenges in the space, in the EDU space, of course. So, like key recovery, technical interoperability between the various sort of islands, ecosystems. But unfortunately, I think the biggest challenge that we face is social. And I say unfortunately because it's hard for an engineer to admit. But specifically, a question of trust, meaning trust frameworks that verify the issuers, specifically. You come across a DID, how do you know the DID belongs to a university? And then further, how do you know that university is legit, is accredited? And similarly, biggest challenge is interoperability on the strategic level, the coalition building of, we've agreed on the envelope, verifiable credentials, but what goes inside the envelope, it is crossing jurisdictional and organizational and state and so many boundaries, just making sure that we recognize each other's credentials. That's it.
Thank you, Dimitri. And Colin, do you want to answer this question too?
Yeah, I'll be brief and build off of what the three others before me shared. I mean, I'm in total agreement there, and I think really it's two things that I've seen from the education side is that alignment and agreement for institutions is challenging. And then adoption, getting universities, getting schools, getting districts and states to agree on any set of like core language or development, Common Core is probably the most recent example of what states could agree on, and not even all 50 states were able to agree on and adopt a Common Core standard. So, that's one challenge, but then I think the other part is adoption and making sure that the EDU tag doesn't fall into what I see a lot of EDU tags happen, which is this churn and burn of here's a new idea, here's a new innovation, let's pilot it, let's play around with it for education, and then 3 years later it's gone. I think in order for the EDU world to play and go in alignment with the VC world, in parallel, that it should happen in the same pace, that VCs for other use cases outside of education don't find adoption and acceleration while the EDU world continues to bicker and figure out where alignment should be around common language and adoption.
Thank you, Colin. Okay, Marty, you're up. You had a question.
Yeah, so hopefully you can hear me.
Yes.
Great.
Thanks.
So a lot of the credential work out there in the education ecosystem is converging here, I believe. And, so there's a lot of considerations for that. And this is just generally for the candidates. How do you think about, the intersections of the other standards bodies work, as well as interoperability between, I'll call it architectures, and you can do with that as you will.
And Marty, is this for all of the candidates or one of the candidates?
I was just asking generally, so all of the candidates.
Okay. We'll go in the same order then. Frank, would you like to answer that question?
Sure. Do you mind if I ask a question with a question? So, Marty, what exactly, I'm not sure I understand what that question is. Is it, what's the impact on different standards in the market on credentialing and its data interoperability? Was that the question?
Yeah, primarily around the data interoperability is we've got tons of standards bodies doing a lot of really interesting work, but they seem to be intersecting here in the education world. But how do you think about interoperability and how do we, as the BCEDU group promote or drive that forward, or do we?
It's a great question. So there's from my perspective, two different views of it. From a technical perspective, you know, data is stored, and as long as we can have access to data and share it, given all of the protocols, whether it's, you know, data that can be shared, whether it's through open APIs or whatever the technical pathways are, whether you're allowed to share it through regulatory policies and things of that nature, data should be shared in terms of what's the use case between schools and between schools and employers, learners, schools. So from a technical perspective, as long as the data can be accessed and shared, you know, that's one piece. If you talk to an enterprise, they're not hung up on as much the standards as they are on, can I get access? What does it look like? How do I interoperate with the data structure I have? Schools are different. If you look at it from a standards perspective, I do believe there are some organizations that have got a lead on that. And have, you know, like IMS Global and the case structures and some of the, you know, the IEEE. So I think there's, you know, if you look at many different organizations that are trying to get there, you have a really good questionnaire or a statement that said, you know, should we play a role or should we not? I'm not too sure yet. I don't think I know enough about, everything, but I would kind of take the view of, let's look at who is leading these standard initiatives. What does that mean? And how does it impact the use cases at the end of the day? Because I think, forget who one of the gentlemen just before me said, it's about adoption. So what is the impact on adoption or not? And then prioritize that. I think, you know, figure that out and then work toward, supporting that.
Thank you, Frank. Simone, would you like to answer Marty's question?
Yeah, my technical answer is that I truly believe that interop is a human thing. It's a human thing. Just make sure I emphasize that. While it's true that apparently many other standard development organizations are working on the same issues, they do converge in the fact that they don't, there's not a conflict of interest, but there is a shared interest. The challenge here is to find the right conversation to be had and how to engage, you know, outside of your own border, the work group's borders. And that's typically done with people that sit in these different, organizational work groups, DIF, PESC, IMS Global, or in the European side. So, you know, I think it's not necessarily a technical challenge, but at some point you need to come together and prove that this interop is really working. And I think some good examples we've seen in the recent past could be a precedent. And I'm referring to the work that Emil John has done at DHS with the SVIP program. Tim Boomer picked that up in Canada and he's running it again. So it's really doing it. It's the plug fest way. So I think that's how interoperability could be shown. But the incentives might be a bit different. But I don't see it as a technical challenge. you know, whether we look at crosswalking between one specification and another, or we solve it in a different way. I feel there is a way, there is a will, therefore I'm confident that there will be a way. Back to you, Carrie.
Thank you, Simone. Dimitri, would you like to answer this question?
Sure. So this is a great question. I strongly believe that the specifications and the tech stacks can converge, and that this VCEDU task force should play a strong role in getting the various groups to align and converge. And I think we should have frequent cross-group exchanges, meaning presenting our work to other groups and inviting other groups to present to ours. So hugely important topic. I agree that the human and social element is probably the more challenging of the two, although there's a lot of engineering heavy lifting as well. But I think it can converge, and we should play a strong role in it.
Thank you, Dimitri. Colin, would you like to answer this question?
Yeah, thanks, Marty, for the question. And I've got to admit, I'm a little spoiled here getting to hear everyone else's responses and then just being able to, I'm nodding along in agreement. And I mean, this is a good example of the group and the power of the group. I think I'll use email and some of the protocols as an example. I think there was a time where email was a sort of a foreign technology that schools were hesitant to adopt because it was new, it was different, it was unfamiliar. And I think this has the potential to be just like that in terms of how quickly it can be adopted once the technology becomes sort of an invisible force that everybody just trusts inherently. And I think the social infrastructure that's required to get groups of people to move to that sort of different ideological approach to doing business, quote unquote. I think that's the kind of shift that we need, and we need people to continue to develop and adopt in sort of their niches. But then kind of like Dimitri was saying, it's like we need to collaborate across our different silos and continue to demonstrate interoperability and use cases that build that trust so that people just say, okay, and then they start using it, and then adoption, I think, will quickly happen beyond that. But I think there's a lot of past technologies that we could learn from in terms of the progress in which, at the rate in which they get adopted.
Thank you, Colin. Okay, next in the queue, we have Sharon Liu. Sharon?
Hi, can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So my question is actually a little bit of a follow-up to Heather's earlier question about important priorities in education and credentialing, and sort of builds on that a little bit. So one of the things that I think that people have been writing a lot about in the education and credentialing space is the growing diversity of credential types, especially credential issuers. And I know that a lot of you spoke specifically about like institutional credential issuing as a use case, but I'm curious about, you know, from your perspective and in your experience, I guess, what do you think are some of the technical priorities that this task force should have, maybe in the next like year or year and a half, that would really allow this diversity of credentials to actually be used, not issued, but like used in, and maybe if you could speak a little bit about like how you feel like they should be used, like whether it's like just by individuals via a wallet, or if you think that there are more downstream use cases that, you know, are technical problems to be solved, like employer integrations, et cetera.
Thanks, Sharon. I guess we'll go in the same order. That's okay with folks. Frank, would you like to answer this?
I feel like, and if you want to reverse the order anytime, you can do that too to give some of the guys a chance if you'd like. But no, I'd be happy. So Sharon, that's a great question, actually. I believe there are two, from my perspective, two views on that. One is the credentials themselves. I think we absolutely need to work with, especially the credential issuers, and I don't mean the schools as much, but other, like other organizations that are industry providers of some level of issuing certifications, that they should include the knowledge, skills, abilities, rich skill descriptors, whatever you want to call it, but some level of a taxonomy within the credential. We've got to be able to lift the cover on these credentials and understand what's inside, because from what I've seen in terms of organizations, enterprises, even within specific industries like cybersecurity, it's great if you have a CSIP certification or what have you, but where did you get it? Did you get it from ISACA? Did you get it from CompTIA? What are the skills within there? And then when you start getting into data and you're able to understand from an from a hiring perspective or even a learning perspective, you need to get down to the taxonomy level, because the taxonomy within the credential will help the learner understand what skills they have, and the proficiency levels will help the enterprise understand the same, because they're searching for that depending on the types of jobs and the level of the job, and will help learning institutions understand what do they need to do to optimize their curriculums to address the skills marketplace. So I believe that's one of them. One of my key views, and the second view would be in terms of how it's used. Then once you have that level of granularity, then you could utilize it in a notion of a skills marketplace. Then you could utilize it where you've got a repository of data that you can search from, you can showcase, whether it's a wallet, or what have you. And I just believe that level of data is what you need to get to in order to address, you know, the skills gap and really implement a marketplace of skills-based learning and hiring.
Thanks, Craig. Simone, do you answer that?
Yep. You know, when I think about credentials in this case, to make them used, they have to be usable and useful at the same time. But really, you know, just to Sean's point, education is opening up. We have different types of issuers that are legitimately offering learning experiences that should be recognized. And so maybe one of the challenge will be possibly looking at how do we resolve identity or in a verifiable credentials, what is the governance behind and how do we identify legit issuers? And this is not just looking them up in a trusted registry, whether it's distributed or centralized, but I think it's, you know, opening up to other actors that are providing good educations, but they just need to be identified without being qualified in a way. So the flexibility around, you know, using a DID, for example, I mean, it's not a technical issue, but is, you know, what else could be used? Or, you know, how can we assign DIDs? And anyone could have, you know, one of those identifiers. But at the issuer level, I think this is an interesting issue to unpack on the governance side. And that's probably a bit beyond the scope of this work group. But if we look at the issue holistically, you know, new types of credentials beg the question, know, who's issuing them, and that's probably not your traditional higher education institutions.
Thank you, Simone. Dimitri?
Thanks. This also is a really good question. On the technical level, I think the most important short-term challenges for us to solve as a group, the biggest one is, and I think this has been echoed by previous speakers, building that issuer registry. If we don't have a list of educational issuers and their decentralized identifiers, we can't really do anything else. We fragment into balkanization and so on. So number one, building that registry, which specifically means agreeing on the governance of who gets to go on that list. And like who decides and what are the appeal processes and so on. So that's technical challenge number one. Number two, I think, is wallets. If we don't have wallets, again, we can't have these student-centric credentials. Or rather, we can, but in a business-as-usual sort of way that we've had over the years that doesn't take advantage of credentials and decentralized identifiers and a lot of the self-administered technology. So what do we mean by wallets? we need to get mobile applications, so mobile wallets, and in-browser web app wallets to interoperate. That's I think the number two key technical challenge, and which is why I'm dove in to both of these projects. I'm involved in building web-based browser wallets for several projects, and of course the mobile app for Digital Credentials Consortium. Number three, I think, is for us to reconcile the tension between small credentials and big bundles like transcripts. And this, I think, is part of the topic later on in the call on how do we interlink credentials and so on. So we need to support both. We need to support both individual small credentials that fit on a QR code, that do selective disclosure, that provide a lot of privacy, but also we need to learn how to handle large bundles such as your entire educational transcript to date and everything in between. And number four, I think, is we need to agree on some tech for common display components. What's happening right now with all of the wallets is each credential, the view component is custom coded. So you have no guarantee and you have no idea if your credential is going to be supported or what it's going to look like on the display in the wallet. And there's some tech that things like Open Badges did by embedding an image, but I think we can do better. I think we can do templated, common, deterministic components. So those are the four. Thanks.
Thanks, Dmitry. Colin?
Well, thank goodness that after this sort of election process, we don't lose any candidates, because I don't think any of these conversations are going any further without the three people that just spoke and everybody else that's on this call. But I think, I mean, Dmitry, that was awesome. You laid out a great priority list, but also technical challenges that, I mean, we're all working on in different ways. And from the IEEE calls, I know that we have spent time getting experts on to talk about each of those aspects pretty explicitly for, you know, a very short amount of time. But to me, I think one of the greatest technical challenges that we could approach in the next year, year and a half, would be to get a small sort of interoperable use case across systems that would help us iron out some of these on a smaller scale. You know, I think of there's a group of higher ed institutions in Colorado that Taylor Kendall and I have been working with, and we have got the social infrastructure to the point where the presidents of three universities are ready to put their name on paper in agreement to what they want to do as far as digital credentials goes. Well, now we have somebody who's ready to deploy a wallet infrastructure that hopefully will help interoperate with the credentials and with their transcripts. They all have verbally agreed to that, but what does that actually look like in day-to-day use cases, and what's the starting point? And I think listening to their conversations, one person says we need to start with digital identity. Another person says we need to start with actual transcript credentials. The other person says, well, we need to have, you know, devices. And so I don't know that one takes priority over the other, but I would propose that finding a small use case or a small set of users to actually start making this sort of trust triangle go and figuring out some things as we learn and implement would be a good starting point.
Thank you, Colin. Does anyone else have any questions? The queue is empty right now. So we have a couple more minutes before we go over how the voting will work. Okay, and is there anything additional? Oh, Deb, please, Deb Everhart, go ahead.
I have a general question that maybe they could each answer quickly, which is there's been a really, so first of all, thank you, all of you, for stepping forward. And this has been a really rich and interesting discussion of opportunities. There's kind of a, there's a lot here that is about use cases and ecosystems and adoption. And then there's also a lot here that's about technical and actually developing a technical specification. Each of you could comment briefly on the balance between those two necessities and your role to play in that in relation to co-chairing this specific work of this specific group. That would be helpful. Thanks.
Thanks, Deb. And actually, yeah, please do keep it brief because I'm needing a little bit of time to go over the voting. So maybe like under a minute each. This time, why don't we start with Colin?
Sure. Yeah, I think for this group specifically, the technical spec around an actual issued credential from a learning institution that is going to go into a wallet would be priority number one. Finding a place to deploy that, I think there would be plenty of places to do that. But I think this group should focus on what is a specification that could be passed back and forth between institutions.
Thank you, Colin. Dimitri?
So this is a hard question, right? What the balance between technical and social should be. And I think all of us agree that it's definitely a balance. I think the key for us to ensure that balance is, as was mentioned before, plugfests and interoperability suites specifically. So I do look to this group for setting a good example in that field among other similar education standards bodies. That's it.
Thank you, Dimitri. And Simone?
Yeah, so when I look at the current composition of this group, I felt that there was no additional need for technical skills. I'm a little bit of an imposter when things get very technical, but I can talk the talk. And so specifically, my contribution wanted to be on the ecosystem side, recognizing that there is some level of maturity and a lot of resources on the technical specification side, but really to bring this into the adoption space, that's what I wanted to have bridge and focus on.
Thank you, Simone. And Frank, your last.
Thank you. Bringing up the backside. So I think schools today have a lot of validation to their registration data, their enrollment data, transcripts, et cetera. I think the focus needs to be on the use case. What's the outcomes that we're looking for in terms of this group's objectives? And at the end of the day, that will drive our focus. And I do believe, you know, there's, you know, is it the learner? Is it the enterprise or is it the schools or is it everybody? But I think it's got to be use case driven. The technology can follow. And just for a highlight, so IQ4 has developed the wallet for over 2 years. We've had something developed before that for 5 years. So we've done a lot of work, with the clearinghouse, with validation, with the LCN, IBM network. And again, it all comes down to the use cases. So that's my feeling is, focus on the use case and then define what technology constructs need to be done to make that happen and to really create that adoption and standardization.
Thank you, Frank. Okay, everyone. I really appreciate all of you for doing this, for stepping up. This work is really important. And, I'd say it's a very passionate group here. So I appreciate you coming in and offering to do the work. Let me share my screen and explain to you how the voting is going to work. Let's see here. Okay, can everyone see my screen?
Yep.
Great, thank you. Okay, so what we're going to do is do this using something called ranked choice voting. We're using a platform called OppaVote. And what you see here is what the voting page will look like. This is just an example, but I will send the link out on our VC Edu mailing list. To make sure you see these notes here, to participate in the vote, you should have a W3C account. You should be a member of the CCG. He should have accepted the W3C community contributor license agreement. And obviously, since a lot of the communication is happening through the public BC Edu mailing list, where I have a typo there, you should join it and make sure you get all that you need. I assume most of you are on there anyway, but this is where the information will be distributed. In fact, I'm going to put that link, before I sign off, I'm going to put that link in the chat so that anybody on this call has it in case they don't. In the voting page will be another description of the role. These are the submissions that were written by each of the candidates. Frank, I apologize. Yours is a response from me, I think, because it needed to be moderated and my login isn't working right now for the mailing list moderation. But what you will see here, and I'll just click on it so everyone can see, is my response to Frank so that you can read his submission there. Lastly, because we're using ranked choice voting, you will see a ballot like this. It will be different for all of you so that there's no bias. This is what it looks like right now, but you'll see if I refresh it, it will change. And then what you can do is rank in the order of who you want in which role, okay? And then click vote. And it works by cookies so that only one vote per person should count based on cookies anyway. It ends, this is very important, I just want to emphasize this, December 5th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time, because I created it so it is in my time zone. It is going, we're going through December 5th because there'll be no meeting next week, so we're going to go a little bit longer. And then on December 6th, we'll review the results. And we're almost at time, so I just want to see if there's any questions. Does anyone have any questions about that while I look up the mailing list for us? Okay, this is right here. This is the link to join the mailing list in case you weren't on there. So I will get the link out today, and I will also make sure it's in the meeting minutes that come out. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact me. All right, everyone. Have a great week. And if you're in the U.S., hope you have a good holiday week. And I'll see you soon. Take care.
Yep. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.